answering. Okay. Good morning. Yes. Okay. So
we didn't have a shiur last week because it was a public holiday. So what happens is now we're nearly finished a topic. I hate when that happens because it's hard to, you know, pick up where we left off. But we're just going to wrap it up. And the topic was the mitzvah of Arla that we read about. And we did learn quite extensively and quite deeply many different explanations of Arla. So the first booklet that you have in front of you, I'll tell you what page it starts with. Page 241. The one that says 241, that booklet. Okay, but you on the computer, you'll just have the right page. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to the page. I'll tell you what page it is. The page, I don't know if I have a number on it, but it has the Sefer HaChinuch. I'll show you. It looks like this. So it's like the third to last page of the booklet, because that's where we left off. We gave, as we say, many different... So it's that booklet. Exactly. So go to the third to last page of that booklet, and you'll see. It has the Sefer HaChinuch on it. I'll show you. Yeah, it's this booklet, right? And Okay. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to see the Sefer HaChinuch. So the mitzvah of Arla, as we said, 3 years you don't eat. The fourth year you take it up to Yerushalayim. And the fifth year you can do whatever you like. And as we saw last time, that the fifth year, Hashem not only says you can eat it, but he actually says he's going to give tremendous bracha to the fruits of the fifth year. It looks like this, the page. So hopefully you can find it. Yeah, there's, I don't know if I have the, and I'm sorry about the two different booklets here. Yeah, oh, so that's the right booklet. Reva, just keep going back, another page, you'll find it. Next one, and then the next one. one more, and then that'll be it. Okay. I'm sorry. It's hard to turn pages. So on the top of the page, it says a kliyakar, and under that it says Sefer HaChinuch. See that? The one that looks like that. Okay. So just to see, I know we did a little bit of this orally, but I just wanted to do it properly. So we'll look into the Sefer HaChinuch. This is the mitzvah, as you see, Reish Mem Zayin, mitzvah saseh Reish Mem Zayin, which is 247. And he tells us like this. Just going to see where we're going to start. We're going to start from the second paragraph that says, Mishor Shei HaMitzvah. I know I didn't bracket it. It says, Mishor Shei HaMitzvah. It's in the middle of the page on the first column. Mishor Shei HaMitzvah. Yeah, do you see? Beautiful. So he says, Sherotza kel liyos ha'adam misoirer lahalel Hashem baruchu betchilas mivchar peiros ilanoisav. So Hashem wants a person to be aroused, to feel inspired, to thank, to praise Hashem at the beginning with the best of his fruits that come off of the tree. And why? Why does Hashem need that thanks and that praise? Why should a person feel that inspiration to sing, so to speak, to Hashem and bring the fruits up to Yerushalayim? So this is a very beautiful idea. Usually we explain it so that we should feel gratitude. Here he says another deep idea. He says, not only that. Kedei sheyanuach alav noyam Hashem ubirchasai. So that the pleasantness and the pleasure of Hashem should rest upon him, and Hashem's brachas should rest upon him. In other words, that Hashem should find him pleasing. So by you being filled with gratitude, Hashem looks at you and he wants to be close to you. He wants to shower you with brachas. So it's a very beautiful way. So Hashem is providing us with a mitzvah which enables us to be worthy of more brachas. That's the idea, which is a very beautiful thing. And he says like this, therefore, and then what will happen? V'yisbaruchu peiraisav, and your fruits will be blessed. Ki akel, because God hatoiv, who is good, chafet b'toiv b'yaisav. Since Hashem is good, he desires the good of his creations. This is very much a theme that the Sefer HaChinuch has many, many times. And he says, many mitzvahs were given to us just because of the kindness of Hashem, because Hashem is so good, and he wants good for us. That's why he provides us with means of bettering ourselves so that he can give us more brachas. And then he says, V'lachein tzivanu lahalaysan. That's why Hashem commanded us to take them up. V'le'echol oysan b'mokim shebachar mimei kedem. That we should eat them in the place that he chose from early days, as we know in Yerushalayim. La'avaydasai baruchu, the place that he chose where we should be serving him. And we know that about that place, it says beautifully in Tehillim, Kisham tziva Hashem Hashem es habracha, that in Yerushalayim specifically, Hashem commanded that there should be extra blessing. So if we take our fruits there, then automatically there will be extra blessing. So again, providing us with a means that we should get extra brachas. That's what Hashem is doing for us. And this part we've already done in the other Mefarshim, that the best fruits actually come out in the fourth year, not the first 3 years. And that's why he wants us to take it up then. I'm just going to see. Let's stop here because the other parts we did. I want to go to the next column. On top of the next, where it says again. So this is again, this is talking about this same mitzvah, and he's giving us a different angle. This is talking specifically why we take it up to Yerushalayim. I know we mentioned, but we didn't see it inside. So he says, Mishar Shei HaMitzvah. So it's on the second column. Sha'akel Baruch Hu Bachar Ba'am Yisrael. So Hashem chose us as his nation. The chafetz again, leman sitkai, and he desires, this is not so much bracha, this is more that we should be righteous. One is to provide us the means to get more physical brachas, and here it's to elevate us to be more righteous. How does this mitzvah make us more righteous? So he says, Lies kulam oiske Torah. So the only way we can be more righteous is if we learn more Torah, which refines us and elevates us. And we know God more by learning his Torah. So with his wisdom, mishcham b'mitzvah zu, so he actually drew them. He literally pulls them with this mitzvah. Leman yilmedu yikhu musar, so that they should learn and they will take musar. Let's see. How is he pulling them? What does that mean? Ki yodeya elekim, because Hashem knows, sh'rov bnei adam nimshachim achar hachomer hapachis. Naturally, what are we pulled? We're pulled to materialism. That's the way Hashem made us, physical people, pulled to the physical, and therefore, which is a much less obviously standard and a much less substance than anything spiritual. B'shegam hu basar, that's what it says at the beginning, because what are we created? Flesh. We're a person of flesh and blood. That's what we naturally crave, naturally drawn to. That's what we naturally relate to. And therefore, because Hashem knows that, and yet Hashem wants us to be refined people, and not just people simply like animals of flesh and blood. So what does he do? He says, and what will happen, unfortunately, because we're so physical, so we won't put our souls into and our efforts into working hard and learning Torah, ub iska tamid, and to constantly be involved in it. So therefore, al kein savav b'tfunasai. So in his wisdom, he organized, he engineered, and he made a plan. V'nosan lahem makim. He made a place designated. Sheyedu hakol divrei Torasai al kolpanim. In that place, everybody will know the words of Torah at least. She'ein safek ki kol adam nimshach l'kbaya dirasai b'makayim shemamayin l'isham. So, first of all, he sets aside a place, and that place, Torah, is very known. One place. So we know, Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, we say, ki mitziyon teitzei Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. It's the holiest place, and Hashem made it in a way where there are people, the Sanhedrin sat there, people learning, people... Now, how is he going to get everybody to go there? What's going to draw them there? Because we don't have time. We're busy with our businesses, busy with our work. So interesting thing, Hashem knows what draws us, our money. Wherever our money has to be, that's where we're going to go. So if we have a financial need, we're going to get there. Now, where's the financial need to go to Yerushalayim? So he says, it's a spiritual place. And yet, so he says, V'lochein b'haleis kolish meiser kol bakar v'tzayn shalai, when a person has to take up their meiser of all of their cattle, shana shana, year by year, b'makim she'asakachach mivat Torah sham, in a place where there is so much learning of Torah, which is v'hi Yerushalayim, she'sham ha'Sanhedrin yoidei dasu mivinei mada. That's where the Sanhedrin sits, the ones who truly have all of the knowledge and understanding of Torah. And he gives us, there's not only the miser that we bring up every year, but there's many different types of misers and trumas that we have to bring up to Dafka to Yerushalayim. As he says, miser tfuasenu ba'arba shnei ha-shmita, certain years of the Shmita, the first and second, and the fourth and the fifth year of the Shmita cycle, we have to take up the miser, miser sheni, and where do we go? We go to Yerushalayim. In the third and sixth year, it's miser ani, right? That's when we just give it to the poor people where we are. But that means that four out of the 7 year cycle, which is really, I mean, the seventh year we can go for sure, we're not even busy working. So four out of 6 years, we are going to have to make a trip. We're forced, we're compelled to go up to Yerushalayim. Besides for the Sholish Regalim, you realize it's a very big thing. This is a very, it's quite an amazing, I wish now, you know, we always say we wish we could travel, but when we, us Australians understand that it's difficult, and yet when you have a real pull in normal times, you make a plan, you get there. Here, it was a necessity, it became a necessity. Otherwise, you say next year, next year, next year, if it's not a necessity. Hashem made sure it was a necessity. So they went. And what's the point of being in Yerushalayim? What's so special? So he explains very beautifully. Let's see how he says it. It's really, it's actually such a clever, if you want to say, way that Hashem engineered it. So he says like this, because as we said, the Maaser Sheni is eaten there. As we're talking about the crops of the fourth year, that's what we're talking about. Al Kol Panim. So there's a choice. Either the owner himself goes, you know, the one who owns all the crops, Lil Mai Torah, and he will learn Torah there. Or at least if he's not able to go, the one who owns all these, whatever it is, the vineyards or the fields, he will at least yishlach l'sham echad mibonav. He's going to send a representative from his family. One of his sons will go up, even if he can't go. So what will happen if one of his sons go up? So he says what that will lead to, sheyilmeit sham v'yen nizun ba'oysan peris, and that, obviously, that what will he do? He will be learning there, and he will be eating the fruit. So he'll learn there as long as it takes him to finish that amount of fruits, because that's what he can live on. Whether he sells it, whatever it is, he's provided, no problem. He has his, and you say the tuition is paid for because he has to take the fruits. That's the masa that he gets. So no problem, he can afford it. He could send his son to learn in Yerushalayim for however much time it is, even if it's only a month or two, whatever it is, and they get recharged. Now what happens? So he says like this, umitoichkach yihyeh, and this is the most incredible part, yihyeh, bechol bayis ubayis mikol yisrael ish chacham yoideya hatayra asher yilameid bechachmasai kol beis aviv. It's not enough that a town should have one rov. It's not enough that there should be five people in the community who know how to learn. Every household will have an expert, at least one person who will have spent time learning. Now when they return home, they'll be able to teach the rest of the household everything that they learned. And even if they can't teach them exactly what they learned, but what does it mean when you have one member of the household who knows the halacha? What does that mean? Not just the rav in the community, but the one who lives with you in your house. So let's see how he describes it, and we know what happens. A lot of times people have this experience, let's say when a child comes back, you know, sometimes people talk about a child comes back from seminary and all of a sudden they've been very inspired and everybody else has to, I don't know, lift their game a little bit. So as he says, let's see how he says it. Says it very beautifully. So he says like this, what will happen is, but you see the power of one person, even if only one member of the family learns, still has an effect. So he says, that's right. Ubechein timale haaretz deya es Hashem. The whole land will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem. He says, b'kiyim chacham echad levad yeh ba'ir. Because if there's only one wise man in the city, oy afilu asar, even 10, ye you harbe mibnei adam shabir, many people of the community, the kol shekein hanoshim v'hayiladim, and even more than the men, the women and the children, what will happen? Shelo yavayu lifneim, they won't ever interact with those people who do know how to learn. They just don't have the opportunity. And therefore, they won't have the influence. They won't have the impact. As he says beautifully. So he says like this, Maybe once a year. Even if you're lucky enough that you go to shul once a week, right? And once a week you hear them talking, but that's only once a week. And as he says, what's the human nature? What's going to happen? It's very nice. You go to shul. Yelchu lebeisam. Then when you come home, v'yashlichu kol divrei hachacham acharei gevam. Just throw it behind. You know, you close the door. Now I'm home. Whatever I heard in shul stays in shul. Home is different. Right? Nobody's here to check. Nobody knows. Not just check. Doesn't mean anything. It doesn't become real. It doesn't become personal. But if you sent a member of your own household and they've gone to learn and now they've come back and they're living with you, what happens then? So then he says, Aval b'yois ha-melamed b'chol bayis u'bayis, right? If the teacher is in every house, shoychen sham, living there, erev ha-voiker v'tzarayim, evening, morning, and afternoon, v'yazhiren tamid, and he will always be able to be on guard and teach them and show them the right way. As yekulam anoshim v'noshim v'yeladim, men, women, children, muzharim v'aimdim, will all be very careful, will all be able to stand strong. V'lo yimotze b'neim shum davar chet v'avayin, and there will be no sin found amongst them. V'yizku l'mashekosov, and then they will merit what it says, v'nasati mishkini b'seichachem, that Hashem will actually dwell amongst all of you individually in everybody's house. Right, you'll be my nation and I will be your God. It's a very beautiful idea. He says it so magnificently, sounds simple, but I suppose what we have to understand, two things from here, is very beautiful. First of all, even if we're one on our own, it's also something. Every individual in the household makes a difference, and a person needs to know that they have to go be inspired. Now, we can't go to Yerushalayim physically, we go to a shir, we put on the internet, whatever it is, we have to consistently inspire ourselves and learn. Otherwise, it doesn't work. It's not possible. And that's how he says. And here, the Torah forced them to take the fruits physically up to Yerushalayim. And halavai, soon we should be able to take a travel, and we should not take it for granted. And if we could go, we should go. Imritz Hashem. Okay, anyways, but in the meantime, soon we'll all be there. That's it. Before Shavasar Vatamas. Okay, so just very quickly on the next page. Turn your page of your booklet. Now, and I know I keep saying quickly because the truth is there's no rush. I guess there's, you know, just that there's so many beautiful things that we want to do. And then I always feel bad that we don't get through too much. But anyways, we'll try our best. This I've done with some people before, and I just want to, I'll try. So we'll do some orally and some inside. This is a sicha, and the Rebbe explains very beautifully a very nice idea on orally. So we'll just, as I summarize, some I'll do inside, some orally. So I'll just share with you at the beginning. The Rebbe explains very beautifully that when it comes to the mitzvah of arla, there's a fascinating halacha. The halacha is like this, that generally speaking, as we say, arla is like, let's say you could compare it to something treif, right? Something which is, because it's forbidden. The fruits of the first 3 years are forbidden to eat, right? So it's forbidden. Usually, like we know the famous thing, we say that if you have a bit of milk and you drop it into a thing of chicken soup, if there's 60 times more chicken soup, it's fine, batul b'shishim, right? Whereas arla has an interesting thing. Arla is not 1 in 60, it's 1 in 200, right? Remember, we've done this. So 1 in 200. Why? Obviously, arla is much more powerful in purity. And it needs 1 in 200 for it to actually become nullified. That's one thing of the halacha. But the other interesting thing is that when it comes to nullifying these halachas, a person can't say, let's say you heard of a very nice recipe that it says that milk is very delicious in chicken soup. So you decide that you're going to make a massive pot of chicken soup and you can put a little bit of milk into it because it's fine. No, it doesn't work that way. We all know that. It's only if it happened, right? Then you can say, oh, it's okay. But you can't l'chatchila do it. That doesn't work that way. Same thing with arla. How does that work with arla? Because the only time that arla can become nullified is once the fruits are off the tree. So once you've cut the fruits off, and let's just say you forgot which fruits, somehow they all got mixed up. And then if there's more than 200 of the good fruits, then it's okay. But while the fruits are still attached to the tree, let's just say you forgot when you planted exactly, right? And you're not sure. While they're still attached, there's no bittul. It doesn't, it's too bad. You can't eat any of it. You forgot. You have to wait for all of it. So therefore, very interesting thing that we learned from that. What's why? What's the idea? Because the technical term is mechubar loy batel. Something which is connected to the ground doesn't become nullified. So while it's still in the ground, the tree is still in the ground, or the fruits are still on the tree, as we say, it's no bittel. And now, if you're going to go and cut it off now, right, when you already realize that you don't know, that's going to be a bit of a problem, because now you are making it. It's like almost like putting the drop of milk into the soup. So it's only if afterwards you realize, right, after you've cut them off, you realize, oh, yeah, I don't know which ones they are, but not before. While they're still attached and you realize you don't know, too bad. Now you just have to wait. Finished. Because while something is attached, it doesn't become batel. Now, let's see what that means. What does that mean for us? So we'll take it out of context a little bit, and we're going to understand it spiritually. So if you go in Ois Beis, you see on the second column, it's page 136 on the top of the page, right? And if you go into the second column, there's a Beis there, and I'll show you. See what he says. You see on the second column, Rona, it's Beis. Yeah, beautiful. I think you're... Okay, very good. So he says, Ale in yonim for nigla de teira, zainan ahayra, oichan avoida, haruchnis for na'idin. So everything in the revealed parts of Torah is also a lesson for us in our spiritual avoida. So is our klal in Torah, there's a general rule, as miut vert batel in roiv. Generally speaking, something small is nullified in something bigger. We even say with a majority, right? You go after the majority, which means that if you're one voice, and let's say there's 10 voices that say differently, you have to follow the 10. So small goes after the more. That's generally speaking. Therefore, what could happen? Ken dachaid trachtin. So a Jew could think, Vibal das atem hamaat mikol ha'amim. Since we are a very, very small nation amongst many nations, idin zainen am minderheit zivishen alefelker. We're just this minimum. We're nothing. In a whole, in a massive world full of people, these meglach as idin zolen haben den kayach nit zu veren eisgemischt or nit veren bottle zu di umais ha'ilam. How is it possible for us not to assimilate? How is it possible for us not to be subjugated and less and part and lose our identity? They are so much more than us. And even Torah says that the majority wins. So what do we say? We learn something very powerful from the mitzvah of Arla. What do we learn from the mitzvah of Arla? So we say like this. Let me just see. Zwischen welche sie gefinden sich scheine, as I feel hundreds of years. We find ourselves so many hundreds of years amongst all these nations. I've dem is the hira. So the lesson is, vibal das idin umetum, since Jews everywhere, vu nor ze gefinden sich, wherever we find ourselves, Zainin ze mechubar mit ze makar, we're connected to our source. Who's our source? Mit Nebishin, we're connected to Hashem. Kenen ze nit veren oiskemisht. If you're connected, you don't get mixed in. While the fruits are still on the tree, it remains Arla no matter what. It still has its distinct identity. It is what it is. We are all connected to Hashem. There's no way we're becoming assimilated. It's just not happening. Sorry. And it's so interesting. There's a pasuk from this week's parasha. I just want to read you here. It says, right? He says, sorry, let me just see where we are. It says, Zainan alamol an am levadad yishkain ubagayim lo yischasher. That's this week's parasha. Beautiful, beautiful. This is one of the most beautiful parashas Baluk, where we get the brachas. And what is one of the brachas that Bilam says? That they are a nation that dwells alone and they are not counted amongst the people of the world. There's many ways to translate it, as we know. We are definitely a nation that stands alone. We don't need Bilam's prophecy. We don't have to look into it to know that. We can just see now. There's no other nation. There's no other country like Israel that gets the attention, negative or positive, however you want to look at it, as it does. It is definitely unique beyond unique to any other nation. And we don't have any supporters. We're always standing alone. And we are not counted amongst the nations. No matter how much we think we will be, we are not counted amongst the nations. But in a positive way, what that means is, and that's what we have to turn it into, a thing of pride, we are different. That's it. We are different, so let's remain different. And what is our difference? Our connection to Hashem and the power that we have to remain a light even in the biggest darkness. And that's what a Jew is. Doesn't matter nothing, the circumstances. He says, "A folk farzich, a nation unto itself, and it's not a problem." Oh, punkt kivyachol vider eibishter. Just like Hashem, we say about Hashem, "Ani Hashem loishanisi." I Hashem haven't changed. Right, Hashem always remains the same. As we say, "In im is kein mol kein shum endurun nita." There's absolutely never any change in Hashem. Eris haya hayve. We go to the next page. V'yiye. Right, he is b'shave. He's past, present, future, equally, right? Hashem is always the same. Azay zayin and oichidin, the same thing with us. Durch va'atem advekim, by being connected to Hashem, zeir chibur mit neibishin, so our connection to Hashem, ei begans is always whole. V'der pasuk firtais, the pasuk actually leads, va'atem b'nei Yaakov loikalisem. This is, I forgot where the pasuk is, I think it's in Yeshayahu, but I'm not sure. No, it's. I don't think it's Yeshayahu. It was. I'm sorry. It was a different navi. It says there that I Hashem haven't changed, and then the end of the pasuk is, "And you, my people, have never been destroyed. I never change, and you're never wiped out. Right? You always remain." So we say like this, as in as we say, so that nobody can ever destroy us totally. But it's an interesting thing. There's another way to explain it. He says, "Nacha Peirush." They're very interesting. That this is like a chassidish way of translating the pasuk. It says like this: as he says, "Ani havaya, I Hashem haven't changed. Right, I'm the same God, which is an awesome, great God who created the world and is constantly controlling and running the world. And you are aware of it. And yet, what do we say? V'atem b'nei Yaakov. So we say, we ask a question: V'bal das ani Hashem lo yishanisi, I Hashem haven't changed. Is farvas va'atem b'nei Yaakov loy kilisem? What do we mean kilisem here? Not destroyed, rather from a different language. We have a very beautiful concept of klois hanefesh. Klois hanefesh means when a Jew pines and yearns so strongly that their neshama leaves their body, they become one with Hashem. If you know how great Hashem is, how could you continue being the simple people going about your daily lives, living ordinary lives? You should be so yearning and with such love of Hashem that you're like, you know, sort of leaving your bodies. And yet you're not, right? That's a question. So the Rebbe says a beautiful thing, really both explanations, both translations are connected. What does that mean, both translations? The one that we're never destroyed and the ones that we actually are constantly, well, unfortunately, we are not, but we should be yearning for Hashem. So he says a very beautiful thing. He says, "Azayvi ala pirushim from apasuk zayin farbundin." Every explanation on the pasuk is connected. Zvishin zich is da aich merum. This is the third paragraph. As a filler der it was gefinzich and a matziv as the idea from ani Hashem loishanisi. So even a Jew who's in that situation, who he knows Hashem hasn't changed, and yet he's not in klois hanefesh, which means even us ordinary Jews who don't always feel so connected to Hashem, because we said, why don't we become assimilated? Because we're connected. But what happens if we don't feel connected? What happens if we don't feel awake? What happens if we don't feel that bond? And we look around and many people don't have that bond. So what do we say? Doesn't matter. The Rebbe says it's there. It's just hidden. It's there. Even a Jew who know, like so to speak, should be more inspired and they're not inspired, doesn't matter. They are never destroyed. They're never going to be wiped out. Why? Because a Jew's connection to Hashem is constant no matter what. Just the problem is sometimes it's not revealed. And that's what we have to do. It's not really good enough. It's okay. It'll keep us surviving. But we don't just want to survive. We want to thrive. So if you're there for the episode like this, let's go to the bottom paragraph. He says, "Mendar faber arais trugin dem chibur begilu." We have to bring it out in a revealed way. And what should be? Unas v'ro'u kol amei ha'aretz, that all the nations of the world should be able to see. Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha, that the name of God is called upon you. In other words, they should be able to see us for who we truly are. As Vetzich Anzen Digetlachkeit, right? That we should be able, it should be able to be visible on us, the godliness, was in Yidden, that's in us. Unitner was the Ame Aretz, was das is Kailal Alen Yane Eilam. Velen Nitmen Nagid Zain, not only will the world not oppose, and so to speak, anything physical doesn't block us from Hashem. Rather, Adrab, on the contrary, V'yaru mimeko, they'll be afraid of us. Unzevelin arayis helfin, and not only will they be afraid, they'll be in awe, and they will help us. They will assist us. They will assist us to remain Jews, to remain different, and to keep focused on what Dalmain is right, what is our mission, and what we can contribute, and what we have to contribute to the world. They'll value it. As we say, the Jew in their service to Hashem, because that's the purpose of the whole creation. I just want to see if, so the Rebbe says, there's one more very important thing, and then we're going to stop with this Indian, because I don't know if I think we mentioned it very short, in a very small way, but the mitzvah of Arla is also connected to another mitzvah. Not another mitzvah, another story, where its origin, as we said, its origin is in Chet Eitz Hadas. I think we did mention in short. What's the connection between Chet Eitz Hadas and Arla? So we know that when Adam was told not to eat from the fruit, whatever the fruit was, it was supposed to be 3 hours. That's all. Self-control was only supposed to be for 3 hours. And then it actually says that it was going to be Friday. It was Friday afternoon. It would have come Shabbos. And many opinions is that it was grapes, and he would have made Kiddush on the grapes of the Eitz Hadas. That's what he was supposed to do. Say L'chaim on the grapes of the Eitz Hadas. That would have been magnificent. That would have been Mashiach, as we say. But he didn't have that self-control. And that's why we have the mitzvah of Arla, to wait 3 years corresponding to those 3 hours, and to instill within us that, if you want to say, that patience, or that more than patience is that self-control of knowing when we're allowed to engage in something and when we have to hold back from engaging in something. So we see a very interesting thing. I just want to show you. So we say like this, that at that time what happened was that what Adam did, as we mentioned, Arla, the three, represents the three deepest levels of impurity. Sholesh in Kabbalah, Sholesh Klipas Atzmei is the three deepest levels of impurity. That's why we can't even touch it. Klipa, as we, I think we mentioned this last time, the word klipa comes from the word shell. Shell protects it. Well, it's actually two things. It hides the fruit and it protects the fruit. It depends. Now it's hiding the fruit. Now we don't see the godliness. When Mashiach will come, it will revert back to its original, where it's just a protection. A protection where God is seen through it, but it enhances it. And that's what we're hoping for. That will happen when we are allowed to engage. But in the meantime, so what we have to do now, as we can see, is we have to remember to retain our identity, who we are, and remember to be strong and be connected to Hashem. And then when Mashiach will come, there will be the concept of Arla, there won't be any more impurity. So everything will be able to be used to serve Hashem. And that's going to be sooner, Mirtz Hashem, when Mashiach will come. Okay, that's all. I mean, there's so much more, but that's all we're going to do for Arla. Now, if you look at the next booklet, so you can put this booklet aside, so it won't be confusing. You have a second booklet on your, with you, and I'll show you some. We're going to go to the next mitzvah. Now, the next mitzvah, this is also, like we say, it's so interesting how the psukim, it's like strange in a way, how the psukim are so cryptic, and you have, like, so much in one pasuk. So I'll just show you some. This is a short pasuk, and it has so much in it. So if you go to the next booklet, you'll see now we're in Perek Yutes Pasuk Chavav, and the pasuk says, it seems like a simple pasuk. It's actually short. First of all, it says, Loisoichlu al hadam. Very difficult to understand, but it says, you shall not eat over the blood. We don't know what that means. It doesn't say you shouldn't eat the blood. We know you're not allowed to eat blood, but this doesn't say you shouldn't eat blood. This says, you shall not eat over the blood. I don't know. And then it says, Loisenachashu, you shall not practice divination. Veloisoinenu, and you shall not believe in lucky times. What a strange pasuk. This is really a pasuk that shows us you need Torah Shabbat. You cannot possibly understand what it's talking about without the commentaries. So as we do, and I'm so sorry because I feel bad, we're not even going to be together next week, but we'll do a little bit, and there were so many beautiful things that connected to this week's parasha that I'll try to, but we'll go Imir Tashem in 2 weeks' time again, but I just want at least to understand a little bit, scratch the surface. What is it talking about? So first we look into Rashi. Rashi always helps us. So, you know, Rona, the next booklet, you can see in the next booklet, you can put this one aside. Don't need this one anymore. Yeah, that's it. There we go. Beautiful. So we'll look into Rashi. Rashi says like this. Loi seichlu al hadam. First of all, what is loi seichlu al hadam? You shall not eat over the blood. So I'll just tell you, and we'll see in the Gemara, there's actually at least 6 ways to explain 6 different mitzvahs that this might be or is alluding to. Okay. Not common mitzvahs, but mitzvahs, nevertheless. Let's see what it is. So Rashi will give us 2 of the examples. So he says, this Lahar Be Panim Nidrash, this pasuk is explained, expounded in many ways in the Gemara Sanhedrin. And we're going to see in a minute what it is. The Tanayim talk about it, Amirim to analyze what is this mitzvah. And he says it's considered a negative commandment that one should not eat from the flesh of that which is holy. So that's one way of looking at it, which means lefnei zrikas damim, before the sprinkling of the blood. When they used to bring a carbon, so we know part of the process of the carbon was that you would shecht it, and then you would burn it, and certain carbonists, you were able to eat the meat, right, of some of the carbon. But there was also part of the process was that the blood had to be sprinkled. You know, on Yom Kippur, we talk about it a lot. In the Machzor, it mentions it. But every carbon had some of the blood that was sprinkled to the different corners of the Mizbeach. So this halacha here is telling us, make sure that you do not eat from the meat of the carbon and before you have sprinkled the blood that needs to be sprinkled on the altar. A simple halacha. That's why it says it this way, al hadam, on the blood. In other words, the blood hasn't been sprinkled, don't eat. One way. Okay, let's see. Rashi will bring one more example that the Gemara gives. He says like this, or another way to explain it is, he says, v'hazhara is also a negative thing, l'oichel mi behemais chulin, that if somebody's eating an ordinary animal, which means not a carbon, like when we eat meat, what do we have to make sure of? We have to make sure that we shouldn't eat it, he says, terem shetetze nafsha, while its life has not yet departed. What does that mean? So sometimes you can shecht an animal, and this is a bit gory, but the animal's not 100% dead yet, right? You can see it like flaps a bit, whatever it is. I mean, it's dead, but it's still moving a bit. So it says that a person shouldn't do anything with the animal yet, like cut off any parts or anything, until it's totally dead. That's what we're saying. Al hadam, while there's still any life force there at all, make sure that you don't go, like, you don't start to partake of that animal. Okay, we wouldn't partake because you have to kash or whatever, but even cut it or whatever it may be, don't start the preparation until it's totally dead. So in other words, don't, and that's what he's saying, on the blood, while it still has some of the energy of the animal. That's another halacha. Before we go to the next Rashi, I'll just show you, turn the page for a minute of your booklet. I wanted to show you something, because just to see the other 3 that the Gemara says, let's see if I... Let me just tell you orally what the other ones are. It's very interesting, different mitzvahs that we learn from here. If you look at the next page, you have a page of Gemara Sanhedrin. So on the second column of the next page, it says like this. It's not 100% clear, but it's here. It says like this. Okay. Now I want you just to look. I feel bad. Look on the bottom, note 39. I just want to show you something. Because here it gives us a very interesting thing in its literal sense. Do you see that paragraph? It says a little 39. In its literal sense, this pasuk refers to a practice of sorcerers who would gather blood in a pit and sit down to eat nearby so that demons who were supposedly attracted to the blood would join their meal and reveal future events to them. This was a practice that was done in those times, according to the Rambam and the Ramban. In those days, they used to partake in all these crazy things, and they would literally put a thing of blood there while they were eating because they thought that it would attract some kind of forces of, I don't know, that could tell them the future and that the Achveis also bring them blessings. Some people say even when somebody died and they would have a meal after the death, they would also maybe even put the blood of the person there and all kinds of things. That's what we're saying. Don't eat on the blood. In other words, don't eat near the blood. That's not a Jewish practice. This is not a Jewish way. Even if you don't eat from the blood itself, we don't do that. We don't practice these kind of things. So according to the Rambam, this is the idea that the Torah many times tells us we should stay away from all forms of idol worship. This was one of their ways that, like, similar to all kinds of idol worship. Okay, but there's another two mitzvahs here. Let's see. So that really another three. Let's see on top over here. If you go to the top, to the actual Gemara part, let me just see, because we mentioned the one about the slaughtered animal before it's completely dead, and then it says, another interesting thing. All right, we said about not until it's sprinkled. I'm looking if there's any more on this page. No, go to the next page of the Gemara, and you'll see Rabbi Yossi. This is very important. This is where we have another interesting one. So it's on the top of the next page of the Gemara. It says Rabbi Yossi Aymer. So what does he say? He explains it. Oh, sorry, Rabbi Doisa, not Rabbi Yossi. I can't even say Rabbi Doisa Aymer. Minayin, from where is it known? She'ein mevarchin. That's not the word. I don't think so. It's not mevarchin, but it's, I can't even see clearly. She'ein mavrin. Right. She'ein mavrin al haruge beisin. Now, I don't know if you know what this is, the meal of the havra. That's when people come back from a funeral. You know how they're not supposed to have their own meal. People have to bring them, right? You have to bring food from outside. People prepare for you the first meal. So very interesting. Unfortunately, if somebody had in their family somebody who was sentenced to death by the beisin, and now they come home, people don't prepare them that meal. It's a very sad thing. It's a different kind of a shiva, because this person has been executed. So one of the explanations that's given is because we want to that the person should gain as much atonement as possible, and therefore we don't take away, if you want to say, anything in this world, any of the suffering in this world. Rather, he should suffer in this world than in the next, so to speak. In other words, so you don't give him any honor so that it would take away, and then you might have to be more punished in the next world. Whatever, that's just one way of looking at it. But you can understand that this doesn't happen very often. As we know, the Beis Din barely, it says once in 70 years, if they did, that was considered a bloody Beis Din. So people weren't killed all often, even though there is a concept of death penalty. But God forbid, if it should happen, then that's what it means. Don't eat on the blood, meaning the blood of the person who has been executed. You don't get your meal brought to you on his blood. That's how they translate the pasuk there. Interesting. There's another way to translate. It's a bit of a stretch, it sounds like, but obviously this was taught by Moshe Rabbeinu. The other thing that it says also is that when... just a second. Okay, then... very interesting. This is actually quite incredible. Now, if a Sanhedrin has sentenced somebody to death, they cannot eat that day. They have to fast. Why? They, exactly, the Sanhedrin. So they cannot eat on the day that they have caused bloodshed, so to speak. They didn't cause it, but they sentenced somebody to die. So here you see the other flip side, the sensitivity. This is such a terrible thing that a Sanhedrin has to do. Unfortunately, it could happen, but they should feel such pain, they cannot eat that day. So you see again, don't eat on the blood. The Sanhedrin doesn't eat while that blood is still, you know, warm, whatever, the day that that person is being executed. Quite a strong thing. And the last one, and this is an interesting one, this is a very famous one, and this is the one that the Sefer HaChinuch takes as this mitzvah, is that this is connected to the concept, which we won't go into in depth, but the Ben Saira Ramayra. That's a Mirtz Hashem one day. It's a terrible topic. Never happened, it says. But there's a child who's of the age of 13, a boy who's rebelling. And rebelling to the sense where he steals money from his parents, and he goes and buys wine and meat, and he does all kinds of terrible things, a lot of different terrible things. There's a lot of conditions that have to be met till he's classified as a Ben Saira Ramayra. But this rebellious son has to be put to death at the end if he taka fulfills all the requirements. As we said, it's almost impossible. So here we say, we are actually talking to the boy himself. Don't eat on your blood, meaning don't take money, steal money, buy meat, and you're going to cause your own bloodshed. So it's telling him to stop himself. Don't eat on your blood. You're going to cause yourself to die. That's what he's saying. It's quite a fascinating way of telling. It's like one of the, it's Mrs. Leisla, I'll say, for the person he should take to heart, don't do it. But it actually can apply to us as well. And I'm just going to tell you something short, which we will develop next time. Very beautiful thing that the Sefer HaChinuch says. It's quite, this sounds so far and like, oh, we'd never engage in any of these practices. So the Sefer HaChinuch brings it very close to home. And he says like this. This commandment is for each and every one of us. We, as he says, we are people of flesh and blood, and naturally, we enjoy our food. And naturally, if a person allows themselves, they will indulge and they will eat more than they need to eat. much more than they need to eat, to the point that it will be unhealthy. That's the fact. So the Sefer HaChinuch says, the Torah is telling us, do not eat on the blood. Don't eat so much that you are going to cause yourself bloodshed, both physically sick and spiritually sick even more. Because he says that it's interesting. He has this idea that it's almost like this corresponding. The more indulgent a person is physically, the weaker they become spiritually. The more you feed the spiritual side, the less you'll need to feed the physical side. You have to eat to be healthy, but the basics. And then he says, if a person overindulges in the physical side, they are going to inevitably deprive themselves of the spiritual side. And that's how he said it. He says such a very interesting thing that modern, I think they could, he says like this, that the truth is that the most important time is when, it's an interesting age. He's like when a boy is like 13. It's like that early teenage where if you train yourself, he says, at that time, when you are starting to indulge and when you're really enjoying the world, children, we know, don't overeat. That usually they don't. They'll eat, and when they're not hungry, they leave it. We see, they're running, they're playing. They don't overeat, usually. You can see, they even leave nash sometimes behind. They don't care. They just eat a little bit, as much as they need, their energy, and they use it. But then when you start to get a little bit older, all of a sudden, we start to appreciate just for the sake of the taiva itself. He says, if you train yourself at that stage, because we're always going to have to eat. Food is something we always have to engage in. But if a person at that stage will train themselves to limit and to eat only what they need, it will be much easier for them throughout their life to deal with this challenge, if you want to say. And then what will happen is that a person will sustain themselves more spiritually and just have enough physically to feed themselves to be strong enough for their spiritual health. So it's quite a very interesting idea how he brings it so close to home. Okay, I just want to share one more thing. We have 10 more minutes, and because this week's Parsha is, and then we didn't even discuss the second part of the Pasuk, so it sounds like so disconnected, except for one way of explaining it with Avodah Zarah. The next part said you shouldn't do divinations, right? And you shouldn't look to good times, auspicious times. So if you, in your booklet, just go to the next page. Yeah, no, not the next page. Sorry. We're going to come back to that next time. Go to two pages, which has a page 297 on the top. The one that has a pasuk there. Do you see that one? Yeah. So that's a pasuk from this week's parasha. I want to show you something. What does it say in this week's parasha? Something beautiful. One of the brachas, he says, Ki loy nochash bi Yaakov, for there is no divination in Yaakov. Right? Our pasuk says we shouldn't do divination. Here, Bilam says, as he's looking out at the Jewish people, there is no divination in Yaakov, the like kesem bi Yisrael, and no sorcery in Israel. Ka'eis ye omer li Yaakov, like this time it will be said to Yaakov, and to Yisrael, ma pa'al kel, what has Hashem done? What does this pasuk mean? What's he saying here, Bilam? So firstly, he's saying like this, you've hired me because you think I can do divination. But you know, the divination has no effect on the Jewish people. Why? They don't engage in divination. Why don't they engage in divination? So Rashi tells us something very powerful. The Jewish people have no need for these things. They don't have a need to find out when is an auspicious time to go to the junction so you don't need to be tested, right? They don't need to find out. What do? They look in Torah and they live their life according, in other words, everything that they do according because Hashem sends us prophets and he tells us what to do. We have guides. We don't need to go to the magicians and the sorcerers and the people who will tell us what's a good time for this, what's a bad time for this. That's not how we live our life. Our life is lived on a much higher plane. We have a connection to the one who controls it all, the real controller, Hashem himself. And he sets out how we should live. So we don't need it. And not only that, Rashi tells us even more. We are even greater than the angels because in the late, when Mashiach will come, we will be sitting there, it says, in front of Hashem. And the Malachim will ask us, what does Hashem want? We will be more in tune to know what the plans of Hashem are. Like, what should be the next move? The Jewish people will be the ones to be asked. Because we don't do divination. We don't, right? It's a very, very, like I say, in 2 weeks' time, or 3 weeks' time, I'll explain it more. But just to understand, because it's connected, such a beautiful concept. What do we see from here? Something amazing. Just in a short to small way. This is all Parshas Kedoshim, right? Holy. What does holy mean? Holy, as we say, the only way we could be holy is because Hashem is holy, modeling ourselves on Hashem. What does modeling on Hashem means? It means living a life which is with godliness. Godliness means that, yes, there's nature, and Hashem tells us we have to live. Hashem tells live responsibly with the nature we have to. We have to follow the rules. But who controls nature? Hashem controls nature. Hashem tells us we have to follow nature, so we do. But we know that Hashem does miracles, and Hashem controls nature as well. We are holy, so we model ourselves on Hashem, which means that even if there aren't better times for something in the world, it doesn't matter. We rise above that. We are Jews. If Hashem wants, He can give us the strength in the good times. He can give us the strength in the challenging times. We can do Torah mitzvahs when it's easy, when it's hard, when it's dark, when it's light. The other thing is, a very beautiful idea that we see from here, why it follows the mitzvah of Arla, such a beautiful thing. So it's interesting, because it's a little bit of a confusing thing. In Arla, we said we had to have patience, right? You had to wait 3 years. Comes also the blood. Also, we have to wait, you see? You have to wait till the animal stops moving. You have to wait till you sprinkle the blood, right? You have to wait. Sometimes we don't engage with something immediately. We take our time because that's what Hashem says. Hashem says that there's a certain time to engage in something. But then Hashem also tells us that you don't ask other magicians when is a good time to do something. So you see, sometimes we do worry about time, right? In other words, when Hashem sets out the first 3 years, you don't eat from the fruits. But when Hashem doesn't tell us, you don't go ask some so-called expert to tell you, when is a good time for me to take the, I don't know, you know, if the bird chirps this way, does that mean, you know, if my bread fell on the butter side, right? No, that's not how we live. We don't pay attention to those things. And we do what we have to, whether it looks like a good time or a bad time, so to speak, if that's not a prescribed time by Hashem. Do you understand? In other words, we live within nature. Time does matter. Mitzvahs have a lot of things to do with time. And yet only when mitzvahs dictates. But when mitzvahs don't dictate, then time cannot have a holiness on its own, so to speak, in a sense where we can take it out of context and say, well, this man said that this will be an auspicious time because you're born on a Wednesday, so Wednesday's a good day for you. No, Torah says, no, that doesn't work that way. So you understand, it's a deep attitude that we have to have. We have to both reckon with the time and not reckon with the time in a certain way, because we reckon only with God's time. It's only how Hashem prescribes it. Kedoshim to you. We look at the world from a whole different perspective, a very high perspective, a perspective of God, which means that we are within and above at the same time. What that means practically, and this is what Bilam saw, and he said, I can't curse these people. They live on a plane which is so different to me. They are attached to Hashem. They have the holiness and the protection of Hashem. Whatever I'm going to say, it's not going to affect them because they live a different life. And therefore, it doesn't matter how I can curse them from today till I don't know where. It's not going to help. It's not going to affect them. I can only bless them because that's what Hashem really wanted him to do. So he did bless them. Even if he would have cursed them, it wouldn't have made a difference because they are only under the jurisdiction of Hashem. And this is what Bilam says. You hired me? I can't do it. It's beyond. They live on a different reality. So it's quite a beautiful idea. Again, I did it in very quick. With Mirza Hashem, when we come back, we'll see more and we'll see the connection more between in the Pasuk. It's a very, very deep and a very, very beautiful. But just for now, I suppose we can try, because this is where we need now more than ever the strength to realize that, yeah, we follow rules 100% and we live within nature. We do what we have to do 100%, but we should not allow ourselves to be afraid. That's not part of it. So you have to be careful to draw the line. Follow the rules, not be afraid. Not allow it to intimidate, not allow it to suppress the right things that we have to do and to be able to be good functioning people without anxiety, without all the load of that the media and whatever else want to put on us. That's not the Torah way, for sure not. So that's a very important part of to remember.